Hey everyone, and welcome back to Purple Row Radio. This edition is for Monday, July 25th, 2011. My name is Greg Stanwood. I am a staff writer at PurpleRow.com, and I am here as always along with the managing editor of Purple Row, Andrew Martin. Andrew, how's it going?
How's it going with me, or how's it going in regards to baseball? Because
how's it going with you first, and then we'll talk about how it's going with baseball.
Well, it's been a really, really hot week out here. Yes, I've heard about the heat waves on the East Coast and Boston's like, you know, heat index of 7 trillion or whatever. But besides that, I mean, I work on a computer all day. I'm inside. It sucks. I mean, I don't get to watch, you know, look at the nature and things like that. But at the same time, you know, I'm also not out in the heat waves. But, you know, it ended up being a relatively nice weekend. Went up to Colden. We got a little Woody's Pizza up there. Went and, you know, dipped my feet in the freezing cold Clear Creek. You know, just a nice, relaxing summer kind of day. But, you know, things are all right. I'm, you know, just kind of nerded out all weekend. Watched a little Star Trek, things like that.
Oh, yeah, I've been watching my share of Star Trek as well.
Oh, yes. Hey, everyone, did you realize that, you know, we're big nerds? I don't know if you knew this, but we're big nerds.
Yes.
Nerds.
Anybody who writes on the internet is to some degree a nerd. And of course.
Oh yeah, it's like the Bible or something. Thou shalt beeth a nerdeth if thou writeth on the internet.
And we both are in nerdy fields of a sort. So that also contributes.
Being an IT guy, you're just the guaranteed like, oh hey, do you know anything about insert technology here? No, not really, but I'll look at it because I can probably figure it out pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I mean, honestly, the day we found out that Star Trek The Next Generation was on Netflix, oh man, like our house just exploded in nerdiness, and, you know, if we're not watching Cheers, we're watching Star Trek.
Cheers, huh?
Cheers is on Netflix too.
Yeah.
Every time I come into like Matt doesn't work Fridays, and so I come in, you know, after work on Friday and find Matt watching Cheers. And he goes, man, I'm like a zillion episodes into this, and I'm not even halfway through the show yet.
It's a long show. I've not watched all of it, but I've watched a lot of it. I've gone through phases through my life of catching certain shows, like, at night as I'm going to bed. So, like, I would watch a certain show for, you know, 6 months, and then it would have looped, and I would have seen the whole thing. So I'd switch channels and then watch something else, and there was a Cheers phase in there somewhere.
Oh yeah, I mean, like, Cheers was that one show that was always on at night, like 10, 11 o'clock after most of, you know, the important programming was done. There's always Cheers reruns on. Always something just to kind of flip and zone out a little bit and, well, watch Cheers. I even own a Cheers shirt. I guess I really like Cheers.
I guess.
Man, we were talking before we started recording, about how Star Trek The Next Generation's on, as on Netflix, and then we are also noticing, you know, hey, well, Deep Space Nine's gonna be along come October. And then Greg points out, yeah, baseball season will be pretty much over then. And it's, oh man, I look forward all season to baseball season, and then the Rockies are sucking this year, and oh my gosh, this could not have been a more disappointing season in that regard, cause I'm like, I just wanna be over, and then I want it to be like next April, like right now, be like, alright, screw it, start over, like, if you're playing a sim game or something, you just like screw it. The season isn't going well. Just sim the rest of it, and then start again at spring training of the following year, and make all your off season trades and whatever. But we got to actually, you know, go through all of it though, and wait for the season to end and stuff like that. And I mean, man, for as much as the winter is, you know, the sports doldrums for me. How I am, oh, hockey's awesome. I shouldn't say the sports doldrums, but you know, baseball season's what's up. And you know, I just wait for it to come back every year. And now that we're in the middle of the season, which is pretty much already over for the Rockies, despite another, you know, 60 games left to play. Yeah, just kind of depressing because there's a lot of losing baseball to watch now in hopes of watching some winning baseball.
Right. And of course, everybody, I imagine for you, it feels somewhat like almost a premature offseason already because the big baseball news in late July is always the trade deadline. And that's going to be the primary, topic for today's show. But of course, that's kind of what the offseason is like too, because baseball fans who are desperate for a fix of some kind are glued to MLB trade rumors or other baseball news sources, and the big stories are, of course, since no baseball is being played, it's always, you know, who's posturing themselves to contend the following season and so on and so forth, and that's kind of where we already are. And so It's probably a little bit of a different experience, but of course I always get yelled at for saying that I enjoy the off season just as much as the regular season, because from my perspective, as I look at baseball as sort of an organizational system, I mean, it's still going on in the off season too. And so this is always interesting to me, as now it's time to look and see how we are going to take this team from where it is now to where it is next April. And I actually do want to say, because I often get this this complaint. Yes, the 2011 season is still going on. This is not an indictment of support for continuing to have faith in the team producing some sort of positive contribution over the next 2 months. But at the same time, I'm basically just saying, don't read too much into us talking about the season like this, because it's been a disappointment, but I'm not here trying to tell you it's over, it's done, let's look ahead. You know, I've been thinking about writing an article for the blog on some of the stuff that'll be some of the roster issues that are going to be coming up over the next couple months, and I just have been imagining writing this article with an important disclaimer at the top. Note, you know, do not take this as me saying, ah, season's over, let's look ahead only. I mean, I just want to make sure that's clear.
Well, there's still games to watch, obviously, and we all want to be excited about the games coming up, and we all, I mean, even, like, I went to the Braves game last week, or I guess during, you know what I mean, like just a few days ago when they were in Coors and they won 12-3. And even if the team is 5 games below 500 the rest of the season, I'm still going to get cocky when they win games. Just, I just do. It makes me feel good to watch the Rockies win. Even, I mean, I remember 2006 when the Rockies were, you know, still going through the beginning of you know, first phase of the wave of Gen R players. And everyone is finally settling in. Holiday and Atkins were having that big season. Hop was having a quietly good season. Jason Jennings was having a good season. All that. And I remember them beating the Mets 2 out of 3. And I'm like, that's right, we beat the Mets. It was the middle of September. I'm like, that's right, we beat the Mets. What are you going to do about it? The Mets are a playoff team. And my buddy points out, and he goes, yeah, because the Mets are totally playing all their starters the entire time against a team that has no chance of making the playoffs. And the Mets have pretty much already secured their postseason. I'm like, shut up, we beat the Mets. And you know, I'm still gonna get cocky about it, even if it's pointlessly cocky. And yeah, I have no grounds to really be cocky. I get excited to see the team win, even when it doesn't really mean anything anymore. I just derive personal, you know, worth or value out of it or anything stupid like that. But you know, you like bragging, right? You like to feel a little good once in a while. When you have a team that's crappy, if you go and you do beat the big team, you can brag about that for a little bit. Be like, yeah, that's right. Yeah, you're all big and high and mighty, and the Rockies, who can't string two wins together, just beat you. What are you going to do about it? And, you know, they can just say, yeah, you know that we're going to the playoffs and you're not, right? And I know. But it's still kind of fun.
So let's get into some of this trade deadline discussion here. I have been out of the loop a little bit. I haven't been reading a lot of the official commentary out there about the Rockies and the trade deadline. I did a quick search for it a little bit earlier, and there's really not a whole lot out there. But you have a theory, basically, on just about what sort of position they're in right now.
Well, it's not so much a theory, it's just kind of seeing the writing on the wall. We know the season's effectively over, and we've talked about this a lot on the site between articles and comments. Just, you know, what does this team need to improve upon for next season to be in winning place? Because on paper, this team was supposed to be a very good team. A lot of people, you know, said the Rockies are going to take the National League West, and it wasn't a ridiculously tall claim. I mean, it ended up obviously not being a truthful claim or an accurate one. Oh, that's the word I'm looking for. It wasn't a successful prediction, but at the same time, it wasn't a bad one to make at the beginning of the season. But so we got to say, all right, now what's got to change for next season to be the one that basically shuts all the naysayers up? That's another tricky question right there, because it's not just as simple as saying, well, everyone's going to do better, because, you know, that's a little silly to say. The team kind of went for broke, obviously isn't what they did for the 2011 season, but they basically said, this is our philosophy. We're going to stick with our guys, that's our thing, we're going to go with our guys, and our guys are going to be the ones that are going to take us there. And our guys didn't take them there. So I wouldn't say they necessarily need to abandon their entire model or anything crazy like that. But obviously they can't go and throw these same guys out on the field next year and expect things to just be different, because that's a little silly.
And as I've postulated many times and pointed out, most of the team, almost all the team, in fact, is under our control next season. And that means that unless we are insane and, you know, throw the team out there the same time next year expecting a different result, we are going to have to be the ones who change it up. It's not going to be as simple as, oh, a whole bunch of players leave and we get a whole bunch of new ones to fill the spot. We need to the organization is in a point here where they have to really run down and inventory their entire system, and they're going to have a lot of responsibility in terms of choosing who to keep, who not to keep, and they're going to have a lot more control over that, which is both sort of a blessing and a curse. It's a blessing in that you gain at least a little bit of power over constructing that roster for 2012, rather than kind of letting it fall into place a certain way. You have the ability to pick and choose. You can be a little bit more selective that way. But at the same time, it's always harder to have such control over that kind of power, in the sense that you might not be willing to get rid of player X this way in any other situation, but, you know, the record speaks for itself. And so it's certainly a possibility that this might be a much more active trade deadline in terms of selling than we're used to.
Yeah, the Rockies are undoubtedly sellers right now. There's... I want to kind of give the same disclaimer you do, that, yeah, I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, and, yeah, they might rattle off a 36-in-a-row winning streak or, you know, whatever. Anything could happen still. There's always that possibility, but I guess the difference between the last two times we've seen this magic, you know, late rush happen, it hasn't just been a September rush or just been great play through August and September. If you, like, go to a certain turning point for whatever it may be, I don't know what the turning point was in 07, but in 09 at least, when Clint Hurdle was let go and Jim Tracy was hired, or promoted, I should say, from bench manager to, you know, manager, if you go from that point on, they were like a 600 team or, you know, better than that. So they're just really good. But there wasn't like a turning point this season where if you go back to arbitrary point in May and then go from there to here and say, oh, yeah, look how great they've been bad. They've been playing bad all season, and yeah, they've had moments of good, and they've had small stretches of good, but then it's almost immediately followed up by another stretch of bad, and it's not the kind of thing where, you know, oh, maybe you haven't been noticing, but since May 15th, the Rockies are... No, it's, if you notice, since the beginning of May, the Rockies have basically been the worst team around. I mean, if you did that same, like, analysis on, you know, from arbitrary midpoint of May to now, be like, oh, this team's been the worst team in baseball or something like that, because they were really, really good to start the season, and even if they're unsustainably good, they were really, really good, and they're really, really exciting to watch, and then fell straight off a cliff. So, frankly, I'm not counting on magic either, and one of my favorite things I always say is, well, that's the thing about a magical run, you can't predict it, and you can't account for it. Yeah, so it might still happen, but I'm the way things are looking right now, I don't think it's gonna happen, and the reason I don't think it's gonna happen is... You know, there's a million different reasons why, well, not a million, I'd take a while to list off a million reasons, but the easy one to blame is, like, injuries, but we can't just say, oh, everyone is hurt, they'll be healthy next year, and everything will go better, because that wasn't the case. Yeah, Ian Stewart was hurt for spring training, and then came back terrible, and then got demoted, and yeah, Jorge De La Rosa is out for the season, and probably a chunk of next season as well, almost assuredly a chunk of next season as well. Ubaldo got hurt for a little while, Tulo and Cargo have been hurt, Cargo's hurt right now. But that's just it. That's not the entire thing.
No.
That's not the entire season. Stewart's been just bad out loud all season. Fowler, although he's come on as of late, has been, you know, below average at best. Second base, the debacle. The backup outfield has been a debacle. Like, catching's been okay. I'm not gonna, you know, praise Chris Iannetta for being the greatest thing on the planet. Because he's having an okay season.
He's having an effective Chris Iannetta season, there's been so much controversy over Iannetta. It actually seems like that controversy, not only at our blog but around the media as well, has fallen a little bit, as I think people have sort of started to realize what he is actually able to contribute. But that legitimately doesn't preclude speculation that it might be it's still a position that could potentially receive an improvement.
Yeah, Iannetta just kind of is what he is, and people need to kind of realize that. Well, I guess when you're talking about someone like Chris Iannetta, we won't go long on this. We could talk about Chris Iannetta for hours. Well, at least I could, because that's, you know, he's like my player to analyze and defend and whatever. Iannetta, he's a guy who's never going to hit for high average. He's going to walk a whole bunch. So basically, as far as, you know, getting on base and not wasting outs goes, he's, you know, going to consistently do that even with a low batting average. And then for, you know, power numbers, he hits for good power, but he just doesn't hit enough to really make it worth it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not really make it worth it. It's still worth it, but it just, as far as situational hitting goes, things like that, it's really hard to say, oh yeah, Iannetta's the big, I'm not gonna defend him on this case. He's having an okay season. He is what he is. He's a back of the lineup hitter. He'll bat 7th or 8th the rest of his career. He's gonna put up good sabermetric numbers and have a bad batting average, and ta-da, there's Chris Iannetta. He's an average defender, throws out a decent number of base runners, but nothing to write home about. He's a slightly above average catcher, and, you know, a lot of teams will take that. I mean, that's why we've had inquiries on Chris Iannetta this season, is because, you know, a lot of teams are hurting for a steadily slightly above average catcher.
Right.
And, like, I mean, the Pirates and the Indians, for example, yeah, they have Carlos Santana, but given his knee injury last year, they've been kind of doing the DH first base catcher thing with him, so he doesn't need to overexert himself. And, you know, that seems to be kind of the thing. Everybody just kind of crosses their fingers and holds their breath until their catcher first gets hurt. And if they, you know, if it goes a few seasons without anything disastrous happening in their, you know, formative baseball years in the majors, then they exhale and say, all right, good, we can trust him now. And that's kind of been the case with Iannetta. I mean, his performance hasn't always been top-notch and, you know, and amazing, but he hasn't had any gigantic injuries. No horrific Buster Posey, Carlos Santana, home plate collisions that have knocked him out for a year. Nothing like that. So, you know, the Rockies have been able to exhale and breathe, at least in that regard. But with, like, the Giants and the Indians, we'll have to see how Bruce Bochy and Brian Sabian decide to handle Buster Posey in the 2012 season. But, you know, it just, people brought this up that they're kind of worried that their top catching prospects are going to get hurt and their giant investment is going to get wasted, and so they just want to stick them at first base. And, you know, really, it's not the worst idea ever, but when you're in a situation where you have a first baseman like the Indians and the Pirates seem to not really be, I guess Garrett Jones is kind of there, but, you know, at least as far as the Giants go, they don't have one, and the Indians have been doing exactly that. And they've been doing that since Victor Martinez was catching with them, is, you know, kind of having a roundabout of a couple guys who play DH, first base, and then catcher if they can. In Hafner's case, obviously not, but you see the point.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I wonder how the Rockies are going to handle Will Rosario and when he's coming up. They've already kind of, well, Troy Renk has hinted at Jordan Pacheco being, you know, brought up to backup first, third, and catcher, and kind of being a triple utility guy. Will Rosario potentially being up as a 1B catcher, and then keeping someone like Eliezer Alfonso or some other Latin-y catcher around so that he can help mentor another young Latin catcher up. I mean, even though Eliezer Alfonso hasn't exactly had an illustrious major league career, he's been in baseball for a while. And he will have things to offer a guy like Rosario as far as just, you know, tips, tricks, how to survive.
Mm-hmm.
So that, I mean, that kind of sets the Rockies situation up. And this is all assuming, of course, that Iannetta does get traded. If he doesn't get traded, there's not much harm in leaving Rosario down a while longer to fine-tune things in the Texas League. A lot of people say, why don't you bump AAA? The common understanding is just if you do good in one level, you get promoted to the next level. And that's, you know, for most levels, that's very true. But we've, Roxgirl pointed this out the other day that AAA has kind of stopped being a developmental league and it started being a depth league. It's where you store your guys like Claudio Vargas, like Cole Garner, like Mike Jacobs. You know, the people that aren't supposed to be on the opening day roster. But should a lot of injuries go down and roster reshuffling isn't working out perfectly, then they call him up to be, you know, that role player. So we'd rather not have Rosario go to a league of, I do wonder about AAA in general, about the attitudes that people have down here. A lot of people have said that AA is for coming up, AAA is for going down, and that you might end up with a lot of AA guys who are just, you know, sour and jaded because they're not in the majors. Which, and not all of them are like that, obviously, but you might have the career minor leaguer who's like, why haven't I gotten called up yet? This is ridiculous, or something along those lines. And then the minor leaguer who used to be a major leaguer is saying, I'm just glad to still be in baseball, and hopefully they need me in the future.
Well, and of course, idea that double A is for going up, triple A going down isn't necessarily always correct. We obviously had Charlie Blackmon start the season in AAA, and I have to think that if Rosario does not take over the starting catching position between now and spring training 2012, he's probably going to be at AAA next season.
I don't like that. Maybe it's just me. I mean, the PCL is a hitter ridiculous league, and it drives me nuts because. It's not the league itself. You factor in the fact that Colorado Springs is freaking moon baseball. It's everything Coors Field used to be and worse. I worry all the time that anybody we send to AAA is just going to wreck their swing and then have to refigure it out in the majors.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's, it's all, cause and effect. Oh, I swung like this and I hit a home run. I'm doing great. And whether or not they're actually, literally and explicitly fooling themselves into something like that and not being like, well, it's pretty offensive heavy park and pitchers can't pitch as well here because of the altitude and the humidor stuff and or lack thereof. And, these guys are typically smart guys, but I can't help but think that some part in their mind, even if it's not an active conscious thing, is saying, oh, yeah, that felt comfortable and I got results, positive, let's keep doing this.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just my constant fear that we're going to bring Rosario up and he's going to be in this league of, mishmash of washed out major league pitchers, borderline prospects who haven't been able to figure it out yet, quadruple A guys or guys who are, just having to have a remedial time in the springs like Stewart or Fowler, for example. And I'm sure a lot of them have great attitudes, but I guess I just don't want to see Will Rosario in Colorado Springs, not to deny the Sky Sox faithful of being able to see one of the Rockies' top prospects, but I'd rather just keep them in the Texas League. I feel like the competition's better. It's a better environment for someone who is, coming up still. But as a counterpoint, I've also read reports that say he's bored down in Colorado, or down in Tulsa, and that's a little disturbing as well. So, should I need to get traded this during this season, before the off season, I would not be surprised to see where Rosario up all the way.
No, I absolutely wouldn't either. I mean, if Iannetta leaves between now, even if he's not traded at the deadline, it'll have to be considered in the offseason as well because, it's going to kind of come in two phases and we're going to have the choice of whether or not it's more productive to trade somebody now or later or not at all. But, If Iannetta is no longer with the team, going into next season, Rosario is the obvious replacement choice, because none of the other players, even if they have more experience, necessarily have the projectability that he does. That's not to say that if he gets rushed to the majors like this, I don't know if rushed is the right word, but promoted twice up through AAA and up to the majors immediately, that they won't let someone like a Jose Morales or Eliezer Alfonso or something split time with him a little bit more than they would otherwise. But at the same time, when you're assigning titles like starting catcher, it's Rosario's spot to take, basically.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised to see the Rockies run a three-catcher rotation in 2012. Just like we were talking about a bit earlier, have Pacheco, Rosario, and then either Iannetta or, Alfonso or Pignazzi or whoever's left over there. So we have one learning catcher, one is just a backstop catch and throw catcher, and one, you know, could be a, you know, back to middle of the lineup hitter very quickly. And, you know, Rosario.
So you don't really necessarily eliminate the option that even if they keep Iannetta, Rosario is going to have a path to the majors next season.
No, I don't deny that at all.
Okay.
It really depends on how the rest of the season goes for Iannetta, how spring training goes for Iannetta, and it seems so weird that we're talking about spring training in the middle of the 2011 season again, but yeah, there's not a necessary you have to move Chris Iannetta. I'm just saying it's a very realistic option. There's value there. But I also wouldn't want to see the Rockies just throw him away. Because he's not making that much money. It's not like he's making $8 million and he's just a drain on the, you know, what. No, it's not like that at all. He's making, I think, $3 million this season or something along those lines. And that's far from bad from a guy who can put up, you know, league average catcher numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what I come down to. I mean, I put my thoughts on Iannetta right now out earlier there. So, you know, when we say he's above average, I mean, it kind of depends on how you want to look at it, because we want to kind of stack him against catchers. Well, actually, that's not really a fair thing to do anymore, because there's a lot of good catchers out there right now. I mean, injured or otherwise. You know, you got Posey, Montero, Santana, Kucherwiz, Joe Mauer, Brian McCann, David Ross, Ramon Hernandez. You know, just, I think, was it John Jaso? He's for the Rays. Or is it Paul Bacco? Whoever the other catcher for Cincinnati Reds are, he's another good catcher. But catching isn't quite the this exact snapshot of Major League Baseball. Catching is not the weakest spot anymore right now. It seems to be third base is. But, you know, the point is still, though, to have a catcher who can handle himself behind the plate, handle a pitching staff, throw out a fair number of base runners, and have an above Major League average batting line, regardless of position, that's a good – that is an asset. And, you know, anybody denying that that's an asset is just, I feel like it's they have an axe to grind against Iannetta himself and are refusing to see value. Because we would not be getting calls on Chris Iannetta if ever the GM on the planet is like, oh, well, he hits 220, he's worthless.